Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
This week on RealityCast, an interview with Sandra Goldshine from the ACLU about the attempts to ban abortion in South Dakota. Also, what makes someone a feminist? Can anti-choicers turn comprehensive sex education into abortion? And who is stupid enough to think that Magic Johnson doesn't have HIV? I've been involved in one series of videos for RH Reality Check, but I'd like to recommend another series that started on the site called Our Reality, which are the stories of the real-life effects of sexual health policies.
General consensus within my class about abstinence only was that it was ridiculous, you know? There was definitely the feeling among other, I guess you'd say young men now, other boys or whatever at the time, that the sooner you had sex, the better. You know, the more masculine, the more man you were. And it made you cool or whatever. And an abstinence-only message is so far removed from someone's lifestyle at that age that it doesn't make any sense. Especially if you're not talking in detail and giving facts about the consequences rather than just plain scare tactics, if you're not being inclusive.
Check them out at the new video button at rhrealitycheck.org. You can see the Our Reality series and the Reality Check series, videos to fill all your reproductive rights advocacy needs. Email to your friends, especially those who are confused, and embed them on your websites. Sarah Palin's ascendancy of being plucked out of Alaska and catapulted to a spot as the Republican running mate has launched the least surprising public debate ever, which is who gets to call herself a feminist. People love this debate because it puts feminists in a bad position. No one likes the mean girls who exclude everyone or anyone, so there's a lot of pressure on feminists to be super inclusive. But it's also fair to point out that the word as a descriptor has no meaning if everyone gets to be called a feminist, regardless of political beliefs. Terry Gross interviewed a political scientist named Ronnie Schreiber, who has written a book called Right-Wing Feminism, an examination of conservative women's groups. It was pretty interesting, and here's a sample.
I think what feminists find most confusing, or maybe even frustrating is the right term, is that they have called for quite some time for the significance of women in politics, for getting more women elected to public office, and making the argument that that will matter, in part because women overall, women in elective office in general, tend to support women's rights, women's feminist interests, and so on. And so I think when Sarah Palin came on the scene, the frustrating thing for feminists is that, frankly, she's conservative. They were having a hard time trying to figure out how to deal with this. I think the other thing that was difficult for feminists is that conservatives were using Sarah Palin to basically call attention to sexism in the media and so on, things that feminists have long called for.
I'm always troubled by describing the conservative women's movement as a movement in the same way feminism was a movement. The conservative women's movement as it stands is almost completely an invention by billionaire right-wing funding gurus like Richard Chafee. Even groups that started off as somewhat independent like Feminists for Life have been incorporated into the wingnut welfare system. Not that the left doesn't have think tanks and the like. Hello, I'm podcasting for one. But they tend to be more about harnessing and funding pre-existing liberal movements, not about inventing from whole cloth something that wouldn't exist if not for funding. None of which is to say that I think it's impossible for a woman to have conservative political ideas and be a feminist. I've been accused of as much, especially by libertarians, but really, I don't think that. It's possible to be for the vague ideas of small government or lower taxes and be pro-feminist. It's not that I want to kick women who think like this out of feminism, not at all. I just think they have ideological beliefs that haven't been well thought out and a weak grip on policy issues. But I believe they believe that men and women are equal, which is the baseline for being a feminist. But the conservative women's movement is exposing itself as an empty shell this election season. They've been called on to support Sarah Palin, and the reason is apparently just because she's a woman, because there's not a coherent conservative women's set of beliefs to get behind. Some conservative women are social conservatives, and some are more libertarian. Conservatives are facing up to the dangers of putting all women under one umbrella, which is that they don't all fit. Witness the way the conservative female punditry fell to arguing on Larry King.
I don't think Sarah Palin is helping McCain. I really don't. Absolutely, she's animating the base. The base is practically hysterical with animation. But he already has the base. Now, the base is not going to vote for Obama. So she's not helping him with the people he needs, which are women voters who have left him en masse to go back to Obama, and with independents and moderates who are leaving the McCain camp. I think many of them were leaning toward him, but now because of her and because of some of this incendiary language, they're moving the other way. So I don't think that's helpful.
Larry, and, we're over.
Yeah.
Larry, that's just completely inaccurate. I hate to tell you this, but...
That's not even the worst of it. Listen to the Fox punditry stand up for every woman's right to get her pictures airbrushed until she looks 18 years old.
Well, have you seen the latest cover of Newsweek? It features a photo of Alaska Governor and Vice Presidential candidate Sarah Palin. And some say it is ridiculously unfair to her. Not the headline, the picture itself. You can't really see it on this full screen, but trust me, you can see it here in person if you hold up, if you buy the magazine or you look at it in the store. Again, you can't really see it here, but trust me. Joining us now to discuss the problem, or is there one? All right, Andrea, you are fired up about this cover. Again, people are going to have to trust you a little bit because it's tough to see. That doesn't really translate through television, but tell us what's upsetting you.
Well, this cover is a clear slap in the face of Sarah Palin. Why? Because it's unretouched.
By the way, I looked at the cover and they're crazy. It looks retouched to me. They just left in details to give the impression that Palin is a human being and not a Barbie doll. So there's a few laugh lines. I'm sure Governor Palin would rather the public know she's not a teenager anymore because teenagers aren't eligible to run for vice president. I do think it's feasible to think of oneself as a conservative feminist, but only to a point. And that point is probably the right to choose. Opposition to abortion rights is grounded in two beliefs about women that preclude believing that women are equal to men. Either that women's sexuality needs to be tightly controlled, or that women are too stupid to understand what they're doing. Or both. Feminist had a recent post up about whether or not one can be pro-life and a feminist, and their cautious conclusion was so long as you are pro-life and pro-choice at the same time. Which is why I hate the term pro-life. A lot of people who call themselves pro-life aren't against abortion rights. They just want a cookie for being morally superior to women they think are insufficiently chaste or maternal. I don't care if you personally would get an abortion. The only thing that matters is where you stand on the right to have one. Sandra Goldshine is on the phone with us today, and she's the ACLU's Reproductive Freedom Project Director of State Advocacy, which sounds like an insanely busy job. She's here today to talk about the situation in South Dakota with the proposed abortion ban. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Sandra.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
Okay, so what is at stake in South Dakota regarding Measure 11?
Well, let's just start with some background. Measure 11 is a South Dakota ballot initiative that would ban virtually all abortions in South Dakota. Now, it's the second time that South Dakotans are being asked to vote on an abortion ban. And just in 2006, a basically identical ballot initiative was decisively rejected by voters. But the ban's back again, and South Dakotans are again going to be voting on an abortion ban on November 4th. But what's at stake goes beyond South Dakota. The real purpose of Measure 11 is to overturn Roe versus Wade. Now, as most of us know, in Roe, the Supreme Court said that states can't ban abortions. It's unconstitutional. So the folks behind the South Dakota abortion ban basically want the Supreme Court to revisit this decision. And so they're trying to pass a ban full well knowing that it will be challenged in court. Now, unfortunately for them, I really think that there's no way South Dakotans are going to let this happen.
So South Dakotans decisively beat back a similar abortion ban in 2006. It wasn't even marginal, if I'm not mistaken. So why is it back again?
Yeah, one would have thought that losing so decisively in 2006, now the abortion ban went down with a 12-point margin, would have been the end of it, that the voters had spoken. But unfortunately, Measure 11 supporters are way too busy pushing their own agenda to listen. And so they've introduced a nearly identical ban and are trying again. But South Dakotans are still going to vote against Measure 11, really because it's interference with personal and private decision making.
From what I understand, the Rights to Life Committee did do some polling data and found that if they could somehow convince people that there was an exception for the life and health of the mother and for rape and incest, that they would win with that. Why is that? Why do you think that's not going to be a factor, since they claim that's what this bill does?
Right. Well, Measure 11 purports to have exceptions for where the woman's health is at risk or for where the pregnancy is a result of rape or incest. But in reality, it's not true. Any doctor that reads that law would not be providing abortions in those situations. The language is so, the exceptions are so restrictive that barely any woman would qualify for it. And I really think that South Dakotans are not just focusing on where the exceptions are. They are focusing on the fact that they have already voted on this, that the voters have already spoken, and also that it interferes with personal and, you know, private decision making. And the South Dakotans really just want to let families decide here. They do not want the government to be involved in this decision. So I don't think there's as much of a focus in South Dakota right now on whether there are exceptions or whether there aren't. This is a place where they do not want the government.
You spent last weekend in South Dakota going door to door and talking to voters about Measure 11. What was that experience like, and what kind of response did you get?
Well, it was a really amazing experience, and very surreal. One day I was reading the newspaper and boiling over with anger about the South Dakota abortion ban. And basically the next day I was knocking on doors in Sioux Falls and explaining reasons why one should vote against this ban. Now, talking with someone can really make a difference, especially on this issue. Because it's such a highly politicized issue, it's important to take it from the front page to how it will impact the lives of women and their families. And people really just liked knowing that they weren't alone in their opposition to Measure 11. I got a lot of thank yous for being there and spending the day knocking on doors. People wanted to see that there were other people that felt the exact same way as they did. And so I was really glad to be there. And so basically, I highly recommend, you know, everyone transforming their newspaper anger into volunteering. And if that's not possible, if you can't get to the state that's making you really angry right now, just making sure that you tell your friends and family about what's making you angry, because many people have to learn what's at stake in South Dakota.
In a blog piece you posted on the ACLU national blog last week, you talk about meeting Tiffany Campbell, a South Dakotan mother who strongly opposes the ban. What is her story, and is it resonating with South Dakota's voters?
Tiffany Campbell is such an incredible woman. I first met her in 2006 when I was canvassing against the first abortion ban, and I was fortunate enough to spend some time with her earlier this month in Sioux Falls. Now, her story is one of incredible difficulty and strength. A few years ago, when she was pregnant with twins, she learned that one of the babies had a severe case of twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. So basically, the twins unequally share blood circulation. So they had to make an incredible hard decision. And Tiffany and her husband decided to abort one of the fetuses in order to give the other a chance at life. And today she has a healthy and happy son who's nearly 2 years old. Tiffany became involved with the fight against Measure 11 because she wants all women to be able to make private and personal medical decisions without government interference. And from what I saw, the South Dakotans who hear her story are able to hear, you know, really just one of the ways Measure 11 inserts the government right into the middle of important medical decisions. And it's impossible to listen to Tiffany and not wonder how else Measure 11 can endanger women and their families. She was really, you know, just absolutely inspirational with the way that she has selflessly used her own personal experience to be able to talk to the public so they understand just how far this goes.
During the 2006 struggle against the abortion ban, there was some kind of a tangle between the state government and Indian reservations, at least one leader of which was saying that they would actually have abortion services on the reservations out of the reach of the state government. Is that a factor in this go-round?
Well, I don't think that particular issue is a factor, but what I think is, you know, important is that the South Dakota Campaign for Healthy Families is doing, you know, is canvassing and talking to voters and calling on people to find out, you know, what, how they're voting and whether, you know, they can understand about the, you know, the reasons why, you know, this ban is so dangerous. And one of the places where they're doing this work is also on in Indian country, on the reservations. And the, you know, the ACLU of South Dakota has a long history of helping, you know, Native Americans defend their rights. And so we are, our ACLU of South Dakota has been working along the reservation so they can understand, you know, how important this ban is to, you know, to every person in South Dakota, as well as to all the people around the country.
Today's guest has been Sondra Goldshine from the ACLU. Next episode, we'll have an interview with Tiffany Campbell herself, the mother we discussed. Good luck in South Dakota, Sondra, and thanks so much for coming onto the show today.
Thank you so much, and I encourage everyone to go to sdhealthyfamilies.org to learn more information about the ban.
Anti-choicers sure do want you to believe that the only battle in the reproductive rights arena is over abortion, which is a subject that makes people feel icky and like they want to shut down and not deal with it. But there's a lot more on the table, and it's getting discussed during this election season. Healthcare access and contraception access, sexual assault, and abstinence-only education. Ah yes, abstinence-only education. It was the shining star in the anti-choice pantheon. It was going to prove way more popular even than getting people to say they don't approve of abortion as birth control. All they had to do was convince the voters that they were just telling your kids to wait to have sex until they were a little older, and hope that people's belief that it's best to wait would kick in. A little smoothing over in the public would never need to know that they were telling kids to wait until you were married, which 95% of Americans don't do. Or that they weren't going to explain the basics of contraception, or that comprehensive sex education programs already told kids to wait until they're ready, and abstinence only was mostly about depriving kids of basic education. Well, the public has wised up to the facts, and abstinence only has lost its popularity. So what to do? Well, time to start the long process of redefining comprehensive sex education as abortion, I guess. They're trying to do it with the birth control pill, so why not just go crazy? Think I'm being silly? Well, let's play a clip of Barack Obama praising comprehensive sex education.
Which should include abstinence-only education and teaching children, you know, that sex is not something casual, but it should also include other, you know, information about contraception, because look, I've got two daughters, 9 years old and 6 years old. I'm going to teach them, first of all, about values and morals. But if they make a mistake, I don't want them punished with a baby. I don't want them punished with an STD at the age of 16.
Now, what was Obama talking about? Education. What was he saying? Very simply, that we should educate kids instead of hoping that their ignorance will cause unplanned pregnancy and STDs as some sort of punishment for having sex. Straightforward. The growing support for comprehensive sex education shows that parents agree. Unplanned pregnancy and STDs, some of which are deadly, are not appropriate ways to punish kids. When I was a teenager, sneaking around with your boyfriend was cause for grounding, not for getting the clap. It makes so much sense that anti-choicers have decided to pretend he was talking about abortion. Media Matters has been keeping track. Here's Chris Janstein refusing to correct Sarah Palin, who is misquoting Obama in precisely this way, by suggesting he was talking about abortion when he was talking about comprehensive sex ed.
Let's go back to politics. Sarah Palin is swinging through Pennsylvania today, holding a rally this morning in the city of Johnstown. She's taking aim at Barack Obama, this time on the issue of abortion.
I listened when our opponent defended his unconditional support for unlimited abortions, and he said... shouldn't have to be, quote, punished with a baby. Ladies and gentlemen, he said that right here in Johnstown, punished with a baby.
Personally, I fail to see why there's so much support for treating babies like punishment. I mean, don't these people claim to love babies? Isn't that the focus of so much of the pieties about the unborn? So why do they disagree with Obama? Do they think babies are punishment? Or should be? Unfortunately, a lot of people are buying the anti-choice line that comprehensive sex education turned into abortion through the magic verbal workings of Barack Obama. Savannah Guthrie on NBC made the same error.
Saturday in Pennsylvania, her most withering attack yet on Obama's stance on abortion.
He said that a woman shouldn't have to be, quote, punished with a baby.
This is no small matter, because by pretending that education is abortion, anti-choicers are concealing the fact that education prevents abortion, which of course was Obama's point. If you know how not to get pregnant, you're less likely to get pregnant. The obstinate refusal of anti-choicers to get this fact inclines me to think they don't want to get it. But it's too late to convince people that the abstinence-only versus comprehensive sex education debate is abortion. Abstinence-only and mocking it has become part of the cultural landscape. The Colbert Report did an on-target satire of the condescending way abstinence-only non-educators talk to teens.
This year, there's a lot of peer pressure on young people to vote.
Young voters.
We've seen so much about young people coming out for Barack Obama.
That young vote.
Young voters love Barack Obama.
Everyone's doing it, talking about it, telling you who they voted for. Sometimes it seems like you're the only one who hasn't done it. Well, guess what? You have a choice. Just like millions of young Americans like you who chose to abstain from voting in 2004. And that's a good thing. It's okay to like somebody, but you don't have to vote for them. Remember, when you vote for a candidate, you're actually voting for every stance they've ever held. So slow down, Ashley. You just met this guy.
I suspect the folks at the Abstinence Clearinghouse who all vote would fry their brains if they saw that. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, the Conspiracy Theory Edition. Minneapolis conservatives Chris Baker and Langdon Perry seem weirdly annoyed at Magic Johnson for not being dead yet.
Thanks.
What about diseases that are eminently treatable and you can live with for a long, long time quite healthily if you just get some
like
basic
Magic
drugs?
Johnson.
Like Magic with his faked AIDS. Magic faked AIDS.
You think Magic faked AIDS
I'm
for sympathy?
I'm convinced that Magic faked AIDS.
Yeah, me too.
It falls apart when you get into motivation. I'm not sure why, but I'm pretty sure he faked AIDS.
I feel kind of stupid taking this on because it only takes about 2 seconds of research to find that HIV affects different people in different ways and that you can live for decades with it before it turns into AIDS or kills you if you're a combination of very healthy, very lucky, and very able to monitor it closely. I suspect that Magic Johnson has the money, for instance, to make sure that he's got the best health management plan possible, and a lot of luck on top of that.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.